Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This is the true story of a successful funeral home director and his devoted wife.
You couldn't drive anywhere without seeing a picture of Mark and Julie together on a billboard.
And the dark, insatiable passions that drive a stake through their marriage.
You have coffins, and then there's women stripping.
It's a story of seething jealousy.
Women don't take kindly to that type of treatment from a man.
Uncontrollable lust.
The nature of the beast was in him.
And fatal betrayal. Beware. Extreme passion can lead to shocking consequences. It's 1998 in the small town of Rocky Mount, North Carolina.
Rocky Mount is a wonderful small southern town.
Rocky Mount is a bedroom type community. Friendly people, nice people, minding their own business kind of people.
27-year-old funeral home director Mark Bowling is one of the town's most prominent young citizens.
Mark Bowling was the owner of Bowling Funeral Homes. He had one in Rocky Mount and some other funeral homes in nearby towns.
Mark was around 6 foot and he weighed about 225. He was athletic looking.
And for the handsome single entrepreneur, things have never been better.
Money was no object to him. Loads of jewelry, Rolex watches and different things. But some people have fetishes such as that, so that was his.
One item he likes to collect goes hand in hand with one of his favorite pastimes, hunting.
He had quite a few weapons. I would guess he had somewhere between 75 to 100 guns.
Larger than life, Mark uses his warmth and charm to great effect in a business where people need comfort in a difficult time. And he has big plans to grow his company.
He was very outgoing. He was very ambitious, to say the least.
He was definitely respected in his field of work.
In October 1998, Mark is hired to direct the funeral of a local woman. When he meets the deceased's devastated daughter named Rose, he has no idea what's in store for him.
Rose was 19 years old when her mother died.
Rose was 5'5", auburn hair. Rose was raised in the country.
Rose came from nothing and didn't have a lot growing up. Her father had a small trailer down a winding dirt driveway. She'd had a hard life.
Mark is used to comforting the grieving. And at the funeral, he goes to great lengths to ease her pain. But something is different about Rose.
Thank you.
The day after the funeral, Mark can't stop thinking about the young woman. and although it's crossing a line, he reaches out.
The funeral occurred on a Friday. By that Sunday, Mark had called Rose, invited her to dinner with him.
I'd like that.
He's 27 when she's 19.
She was very young, very impressionable at the time.
After anyone dies in someone's family, there is a moment of just being lost and need for someone to reach out and help.
But later that night, caught between her grief and his lust, sparks ignite.
Dinner quickly turned into a sexual rendezvous. She apparently lost her virginity to Mark Bowling that day.
For the teenage Rose, it's a seismic moment.
Here was someone who's a real adult. He had power and authority. The fact that Rose's mom had just died really played a big part in this. He took advantage of Rose going through that.
Mark and Rose immediately dive into a passionate sexual relationship.
For Rose, I think she thought this was the real thing. This was love at a time when she was vulnerable.
But just a few months after Mark and Rose begin seeing each other, Mark meets someone who will change his life. Julie.
Julie was an attractive older woman. There was about a 10-year age difference between her and Mark.
Julie was definitely older than Mark, but when they met each other, age didn't much matter. They were attracted to each other. She was a very gracious Southern lady. Blonde-haired, very nice-looking.
She had a real good personality. She was very outgoing, very personable lady.
The confident and attractive Julie has a thriving career in the medical profession.
Julie was a radiation therapist. She worked in a cancer ward. I've heard that she was good with people. You'd have to be, because so often you're meeting people on what may be one of the worst days of their lives.
But it's not only Julie's vivacious personality that Mark finds appealing. She also gives off the kind of country club vibe that Mark has been striving for.
Mark found this is the image I want to portray for my business. This is what I need, a woman like Julie, proper Southern blonde, and not the Rose Vincent of the world.
So just 5 months after seducing the impressionable Rose for the first time, Mark makes a harsh decision.
After Mark met Julie, he pretty quickly cut things off with Rose. He told her that he was going to marry Julie. I believe Rose was devastated.
And it was very simple for him to make that decision. Rose is out and Julie is in. And I think that was a very tough pill for Rose to swallow, since that was her first true love. Women don't take kindly to that type of treatment from a man.
Mark and Julie are quickly married, and their relationship becomes the envy of their friends.
Mark and Julie Bowling, they definitely seemed like a perfect couple.
They soon move in to their dream home.
Julie and Mark lived in an upscale neighborhood in Rocky Mount.
They were very well off. They lived in a ranch-style two-story house. Most definitely walked in there and said, this is a very, very nice home.
Mark and Julie had no children. They had two dogs that they pampered as if they were kids.
Julie becomes joint partners with Mark at the funeral home.
You couldn't drive anywhere in Nash Counties without seeing a picture of Mark and Julie together on a billboard. They put up a united front that they were this happy, loving couple that just seemed to have the perfect life.
But by 2005, now into their sixth year of marriage, cracks are starting to appear just under the flawless facade.
Everybody can put on a great front for their marriages and how they're feeling when they go out in public. And so people really didn't know how Mark and Julie actually felt about one another.
In fact, whether it's the age difference or simply things turning stale, one crucial aspect of their relationship has disappeared.
Several people confirmed that the intimacy in their marriage was basically gone.
I'm really tired. I just want to sleep.
Lack of sexual intimacy can drive many couples apart.
And red-blooded alpha male Mark finds himself struggling to cope.
Not having access to sex is probably number one driving him crazy. And also, it has something to do with how he sees himself. And not having sex does affect his ego and his sense of self-worth.
That took a toll on them, and so you wouldn't have known that.
Increasingly frustrated in his marriage, Mark is at work one day when a familiar face walks in the door. It's Rose.
Rose went to the Bowling funeral home for her father. He was apparently making arrangements for his own funeral.
Rose has never quite gotten over her breakup from Mark 7 years earlier, even though she's tried hard to move on with her life and is now married.
Rose was about 26 at the time. She was married with 3 children of her own, living in a trailer in the area. So her circumstances were vastly different from Mark and Julie's in their lavish house in a well-respected neighborhood.
You look amazing.
Seeing Mark again stirs up a well of long-repressed feelings. She begins to think hard about her circumstances.
Rose's story has a lot of heartbreaking elements. She didn't have a nice home, a trailer with her husband, and 3 small children. She was living a very tough life.
She sees how much Mark's business has grown and finds herself consumed with envy for the woman who replaced her.
The thought had to cross her mind that this could have been my life. She had to be thinking that.
I think Rose was tired of her lifestyle. She felt trapped. And she wanted out.
Over the next few weeks, Mark and Rose are in constant communication.
Her and Mark spent about a month after they reconnected, just texting and calling and getting to know each other all over again.
I'm sure Rose was excited by the prospect of spending more time with Mark Bowling. She was trying to make ends meet. And here you have this rich business owner calling you on the phone. Of course that's going to make you feel special.
And for Mark, it's also becoming an escape from his own situation.
I think Mark probably got a thrill from reaching outside of his relationship.
Each yearning for something more than the cards life has dealt them, the mutual attraction is palpable. About a month later, Mark and Rose make plans to meet up in person in a most unusual place.
The funeral home itself had an apartment.
It was just a small space upstairs, probably so he could sleep there if work was keeping him too busy. And also, since this was a funeral home, he had caskets up there.
For the 2 former lovers, the spark is dangerously close to reigniting.
There'd been weeks of buildup in their relationship. He took Rose up to that second floor apartment.
Surrounded by caskets and funeral paraphernalia, they can't contain their lust any longer.
The affair really began at that point.
What is so intriguing about this situation is that Mark was carrying on extramarital affairs upstairs in an apartment that also contained caskets. It was odd.
You would think a funeral home is not what I would look at as one of the most romantic places that you'd want to be. It takes different strokes for different folks.
Kind of a sick situation for normal people. He thrived in that type of situation, unfortunately.
But what the couple doesn't realize is that they've pulled the trigger on a race to the bottom of the grave.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
With his marriage to his wife Julie turning stale, mortician Mark Bowling has just renewed a steamy affair with an old flame named Rose.
It was definitely a 0-60 relationship.
And Rose's resentment towards Mark's wife, Julie, fuels her lust for the alpha dog Undertaker.
I think Rose had a lot of contempt for Julie, and so anytime she could be, in her mind, upsetting Julie while also making Mark happy, I'm sure that was like a double bonus.
But Rose doesn't realize she won't be Mark's only guilty pleasure much longer. In early 2006, one of Mark's best friends is getting married, and Mark's been given a classic role to play.
Mark has to throw a bachelor party.
The guys meet at Mark's apartment above the funeral home, where Mark has organized a very special surprise. A succession of beautiful women slink towards them between the caskets.
He gets strippers from an escort service, and so in this upstairs apartment, there are strippers dancing around, while presumably downstairs, there's someone's dead family member.
To the guy's delight, the women turn it on, performing for them right there among the caskets.
It's extremely bizarre to have coffins, and then there's women stripping. But I bet it's a story that all of those men has told time and time again.
It really is telling that Mark would feel that it was okay to have such a function in the place of such a serious business.
And in the midst of this supercharged atmosphere, one stripper catches Mark's eye. Her name is Ashley.
Ashley was a very good-looking woman.
Ashley was 24 at the time that she met Mark. She was about 5'2", in great physical shape, short blondish hair, small features, and was considered very attractive by Mark.
By the end of the night, Mark makes sure she doesn't slip away.
He certainly took an interest in her, and they exchanged cell phone numbers.
Over the next few months, Mark regularly invites Ashley to his bachelor's lair above the funeral home. It's clear that Mark now wants more from Ashley than just a lap dance. But when you're sleeping with a call girl, nothing is free.
Mark and Ashley had an arrangement. She would come over to the apartment for about 10 to 15 minutes. She would perform oral sex. And after she stayed an hour, he paid her about $180 to $200 in cash for the visit.
For men, this type of arrangement has one major perk, and that is access to sex on a regular basis without a lot of the emotional ties, without the responsibility of an actual relationship. sexual gratification for Mark may have been the main motivation, but also, in a way, these are women he could all control. It does a lot to boost his ego.
The nature of the beast was in him. Mark's sexual appetite, it was larger than I've ever seen before.
Mark believes he can have it all, juggling his extracurricular activities with Ashley, with his duties as businessman and husband. And through it all, he also keeps his affair with Rose very much alive.
They had been connected the whole time. He was telling her everything she wanted to hear.
Mark convinces Rose she's his perfect match.
It was quite evident that she thought she was the one.
Rose had no knowledge of Mark's affairs with Ashley.
Blinded by love, Rose not only wants to keep their affair going, she wants to take it to the highest level by replacing his wife, Julie.
Sometimes you just have to wait.
Rose was not happy in her marriage and saw the lavish lifestyle that Mark had and wished to be Mrs. Mark Bowling. There can only be one Mrs. Mark Bowling unless something happened to that person.
As Rose daydreams about living happily ever after with Mark, she starts pressing him for answers.
Rose would question him about, when are we going to be a couple? And Mark would reply, at some point in the future, dear Rose, you and I will be together. I think she was blind to what really was going on.
Rose has no way of knowing she's being drawn into Mark's increasingly twisted web of lust.
Ashley didn't know about Rose. Rose didn't know about Ashley. And my understanding is that Julie didn't know about either one.
Mark can't afford for either Ashley or Rose to find out about each other and seek revenge by telling his wife, Julie.
They had this business together that he couldn't financially afford to divorce Julie. It would just ruin him.
As summer draws to a close, Julie Bowling is feeling isolated in her marriage.
Julie had expressed doubts to some friends of hers about the marriage with Mark. Who knows if it was their age difference.
She wasn't as interested in going out and doing the same things that Mark was.
In the fall of 2006, with her husband spending more and more time out of the house, Julie smells a rat.
I don't think Julie necessarily knew for a fact what was going on.
She's a very refined woman, but she's also a stern woman. She was going to start putting some reins on Mark and take control.
But if she finds out that her husband is cheating on her with not one, but two different women, there's no telling what she'll do about it.
I don't think she liked what she saw. Things were going downhill fast.
With both his mistresses and his wife in the dark, Mark Bowling's playing a high-stakes game. One false move, and the whole house of cards will come crashing down. Funeral director Mark Bowling is carrying on a string of affairs behind his wife Julie's back. But by the fall of 2006, his lavish playboy lifestyle was having a major impact on his finances.
I don't know the exact amount of money that Mark was spending with the escort services, but if you're living above your means, that'll catch anyone.
And other rampant spending now threatens his pride and joy, his group of funeral homes.
He tried to expand too far, too fast with that business. Behind the scenes, the funeral homes were not doing well at all.
In the midst of his money troubles, Mark seeks comfort in his girl for hire, Ashley. But Mark has no idea what type of woman he's been dealing with.
Ashley had criminal charges pending against her. She had written about 12 worthless checks, and so she was let go from the escort service because of her criminal activity.
And far from providing the solace of physical comfort, Ashley's about to join Mark's mounting list of problems.
Now that Ashley doesn't have a job every time she visits him, that's one of the only sources of income she has.
Ashley pays careful attention to what Mark tells her about his home life.
He started opening up to Ashley, telling her about problems in his own marriage.
Is Ashley starting to imagine a world in which Mark's wife, Julie, is out of the picture? And just how far is she prepared to go to have Mark all to herself? Meanwhile, his lover, Rose, is demanding more and more from him.
These compartments that Mark has put his life in are starting to spill over. He's having a harder and harder time even keeping his story straight.
About a year into their renewed affair, Rose is convinced she's going to escape her life of poverty and have a perfect future with Mark.
I have been crazy busy.
Just have to pick up a phone.
Hey.
Rose wanted to be Mrs. Mark Bowling. Rose wanted the life that Julie had, that she had missed out on it earlier when he met Julie. She never got over that.
But Mark has everything to lose if Rose learns the truth. If she knew about Mark's cheating, Rose's adoring love for Mark could easily turn into the fury of a woman scorned.
Rose is certainly a threat to Mark. Julie could ruin him financially. Mark certainly can't afford for Rose to tell Julie anything.
Despite all of his promises to Rose, Mark has no intention of divorcing his wife. But he seems to be too addicted to his lustful trysts with both Rose and Ashley to give either one up. His predicament gets even worse when Julie Bowling receives some very disturbing news.
They technically are joint partners at the funeral home. Julie had gotten several telephone calls, word of bills not being paid. Somehow, the money was not there, so she became alarmed and she started digging.
Alerted to a number of unpaid bills by concerned vendors, Julie begins examining the funeral home accounts.
I doubt they had the strippers budgeted. When you're spending thousands of dollars for that kind of entertainment, it's going to cause trouble somewhere.
I think at this point in Mark's life, the gig is up.
When we start doing things like that, we become invisible to ourselves, and we take chances we probably shouldn't take.
Mark's life has become a disaster zone. So he makes a bold decision to come clean with Julie about their financial problems, although he doesn't admit to his secret affairs. It turns out Mark's salvation has been right in front of him all along.
Julie was there for Mark.
Talk to me.
I think she was a classy lady, and I think she was trying to do what wives should do to help their husbands. She was supportive.
I'm here for you.
I don't think he knew just how lucky he was to have a wife as compassionate and understanding as Julie. She was going to stand by him come hell or high water.
I love you.
I love you too.
It's clear Mark's under tremendous stress. So they agree that they both need to get away from it all.
In December, Mark and some of his friends have this plan to go to Florida to go scuba diving, this vacation to get away from everything.
Originally, Julie was supposed to accompany him. For some reason, Julie couldn't go on the trip.
As Mark and Julie say their goodbyes before his trip, they pledge to spend more time with each other.
The month after this scuba trip, Mark and Julie had plans to go on a cruise together.
Could this finally be the fresh beginning the Bowlings need to rekindle their marriage? Then, just after dawn on the morning of December 8th, 2006, one day following Mark's departure, any hope of a new start is destroyed forever when the local sheriff's department gets a 911 call.
Spanish County 911.
Yes, my friend is out for work. She's in a large dead.
Ma'am, calm down. I can't understand what you're saying, ma'am.
She's dead.
The call was from a frantic woman stating that her coworker was lying in a pool of blood in her own garage.
Responders and police rush to the scene, but it's too late.
And the victim was identified as Julie Bowling, and it was appeared that she was deceased.
No one has any idea who'd want to harm Julie Bowling, but police are about to uncover a twisted web of lust, betrayal, and obsession run riot behind the closed doors of a funeral home. Julie Bowling, the popular, vivacious wife of Undertaker Mark Bowling, has been found dead outside their home. The cause of death is immediately obvious to investigators.
She had been shot multiple times. She had one shot to her abdomen, one shot to her upper torso, and one shot just below the neckline.
In fact, it looks as though someone has emptied a fully loaded gun into her body. But the scene yields little physical evidence or clues about who killed her.
There was no ballistics evidence, no shell casings. Her purse was lying there. She was still clothed. No signs of robbery. It looked to be a personal crime.
Detectives are baffled.
No eyewitnesses. They basically had nothing to go on. I asked, what do you know about her life? Does she have any enemies?
And then there's the most crucial question of all.
Where's the husband? A wife dead in a garage, where's the husband?
We find out that Mark was in Florida scuba diving with some friends.
So the husband didn't do it. No one had any answers.
Investigators proceed with the grim task of breaking the news to Julie's husband, Mark.
When Mark found out, he seemed to just be numb.
By nightfall, Mark has arrived back in Rocky Mount.
7 o'clock that evening, he's at the sheriff's office, and I interview Mark.
Police begin probing Mark about his marriage. Reluctantly, Mark reveals that he hasn't always been the perfect husband.
When I asked him in the beginning about his extramarital affairs, he said it really has no bearing on this case. I said, yes, it does. I'm not trying to embarrass you. I'm just trying to find out who killed your wife. So everything is important.
But despite the sordid revelation, it's clear the interview is going nowhere fast. When Mark suddenly drops a bombshell.
They're basically finished with the interview. And Mark's getting ready to leave, and out of the clear blue, he stops.
And he said, well, something I need to tell you.
You might want to check out a woman by the name of Rose Vincent.
Mark explained that Rose was a young lady that he had met at her mother's funeral. And they began having an affair together. She was stalking him, and she was making remarks that she should wring Julie's neck. She should take a ball bat to Julie.
It seems that for some time, Mark has been living in fear of Rose's violent tendencies. And now the distraught widower reveals a tale of obsession bordering on murderous hatred.
He labeled her a stalker, a whore, everything you could possibly think of. He said that she had conducted several acts of vandalism on the property, had tried to poison the dog.
Police now consider Rose a person of interest. At approximately 5 a.m., almost 24 hours since the discovery of Julie Bowling's body, police arrive at the trailer park that Rose calls home.
She was brought to the sheriff's office, and I began interviewing Rose. She would answer direct, simple questions about her background, but if you were to say, do you know Julie Bowling? And she would never look you in the eye.
But one of the detectives has noticed Rose's car parked outside her home and decides to call her bluff.
I asked her, does your vehicle have GPS service? She said, yeah, it does. And I said, we contacted them. And we know everywhere you went with that vehicle today.
At that point, Rose cracks and makes a shocking confession.
Rose admits that she was the one that went to the garage, cornered Julie Bowling, and killed her that morning.
The big question was, why? Why did you kill Julie Bowling?
Detectives lean hard on Rose, but they swiftly realize that they're not dealing with an average suspect.
She would not look up at me. She would not speak. You would think you were talking to a zombie.
But when police share with Rose just who led them to her, she suddenly switches into a very different gear.
It was revealed to Rose that they got her name from Mark Bowling.
All hours of the day.
No, that's not true!
To their amazement, Rose unleashes a tidal wave of rage.
That made her very upset.
And she has a shattering announcement of her own.
She said, well, it was Mark Bowling's idea. The gun came from Mark Bowling.
Because he showed me how to use the gun.
Police are stunned. But given Rose's deranged manner, they have no way of knowing whether they're hearing the truth or the ravings of an obsessed lover. They need more to go on. They need proof. They need the weapon. And Rose now claims she can lead them right to it.
She can take them to the weapon. She's actually buried it in the family cemetery where her mother is buried.
It's a shocking allegation by Mark Bowling's mistress, Rose. But police only have her word against the respected town undertaker. And they're about to uncover someone else who's been protecting a disturbing secret. Mark's girlfriend, Ashley, will soon seal everyone's fate. Mark Bowling's wife, Julie, has been ruthlessly gunned down outside the couple's luxury home. Mark's mistress, Rose, now admits that she pulled the trigger, but insists that the plot to murder Julie was all Mark's idea. Is she telling the truth or covering up her own murderous obsession? After leading detectives to the cemetery where she buried the gun she used to kill Julie, Rose is arrested on the spot. The gun yields no conclusive prints, but police now look closer at Mark. And even though the respectable mortician seems an unlikely suspect, something has been bothering them since Mark first learned of Julie's death.
He didn't ask how she died or any of it. I would have certainly, especially, you know, if it was my wife involved.
A natural reaction for a husband would be, oh my God, what happened to her? Unless you already knew what happened to her. And they thought that was mighty strange.
Mark is escorted back to the local sheriff's department. He remains adamant that Rose acted alone.
Fatal attraction, that was Mark's term. He tried to paint Rose as being delusional and killing Julie out of jealousy.
Police are going round in circles, with only Rose's word against Mark's. But unknown to him, they're about to get a critical break in the case from an unlikely source.
Investigators were talking with employees at the Bowling funeral homes.
And that's when things take a sharp left turn.
They were putting together a puzzle that showed that Mark wasn't the pillar in the community that he claimed to be.
And a sordid tale now unfurls to the stunned police.
Unbeknownst to Mark, employees were aware that there was other business being conducted that wasn't necessarily part of the funeral home.
What they start to find is this secret life behind the billboards. The bachelor party with the coffins and the strippers. Sexual rendezvous above his funeral parlor. Eventually, they come to Ashley.
The shocking revelations have finally led investigators to Ashley's door.
Investigators discovered that they had had this relationship.
Ashley describes her former client as an insatiable sex fiend, but the police know that doesn't necessarily make him a killer. Is she about to put the final nail in his coffin? The answer will send a shockwave through the sleepy little southern town.
Mark, during one of their sessions, had said to Ashley, "Can you kill my wife for me?" That he had offered her $25,000, and Ashley thought he was joking.
I didn't think he was serious.
Ashley's version of events confirms Rose's story that Mark Bowling was the mastermind behind his wife's death. With both Ashley and Rose's statements, investigators now have a clear picture of the events leading up to the murder of Julie Bowling. Weeks earlier, Mark began trying to convince each of his lovers in turn to kill his wife.
In November, Mark had approached Ashley about killing Julie. Ashley declined, saying no, that wasn't something that she was going to do.
So in desperation, he turned to Rose.
And Mark said, "You've got to do something about Julie so you and I can be together." He played upon her weakness.
Mark made it clear to Rose that divorcing Julie wasn't an option, but there was an additional incentive for her to commit the crime. Money.
There was a sizable life insurance policy that Mark had taken out on Julie's life just within the year before her death.
Rose tells investigators that Mark was playing on Rose's emotions, that if she didn't do this, he was going to kill himself.
Rose claims that in light of Mark's suicide threat, she felt she had no choice.
The day before the murder took place, he told Rose how the home was laid out, what time Julie would leave for work.
And Mark had one final chilling instruction for the woman who would do anything, even commit cold-blooded murder, to be with him.
Mark also told Rose that when she shot Julie, shoot her till the gun stops.
Completely under Mark's spell, Rose went to the home he shared with Julie early on the morning of December 8th and waited for her to leave for work.
Rose called her name.
Mrs. Bowling?
Julie turned around. She shot Julie once, started to walk away. And then she turned around and told investigators she walked to Julie's body and shot until the gun stopped.
The weapon that Rose hid in the cemetery becomes a critical piece of evidence.
The weapon was a .32 caliber revolver. He said, "No, I don't have one. You'll never prove that that gun belonged to me." But when they got the search warrant to go into the house, on the shelf was a box of .32 caliber bullets. Why do you have a box of .32 caliber bullets if you don't own a .32 caliber weapon?
The case eventually comes to trial on September 22nd, 2008. Prosecutors paint a damning portrait of Mark Bowling as a man on the ropes financially, who sought a desperate way out.
What better way to save a business that's floundering than a life insurance payment? That became the motive for the murder.
Not only that, but Julie was also increasingly a thorn in her playboy husband's side.
Mark led a double life, calling escort services and running off with prostitutes and strippers.
Despite the coffins and any other kind of creepy scenery, that apartment was Mark Bowling's love shack.
The defense team doesn't try to conceal Mark's sordid behavior from the jurors, but insists that Rose was the sole perpetrator of the murder.
Even though his moral character wasn't the best in the world, that didn't make him a murderer in their book, and he was, in fact, telling the truth when he said, "I didn't kill Julie."
But as the day of Rose's testimony arrives, it seems Mark Bowling finally senses the wolf is at his door.
Rose was the next witness to testify. And when he saw her brought into the courtroom in shackles in her prison uniform, the defense quickly asked for a recess.
Within hours, the judge makes a stunning announcement. Mark Bowling now wants to plead guilty to second-degree murder.
He saw the writing on the wall. In the South, you don't discuss your sexual relations in public. And here it was in black and white. And it was one twist after another that he had wanted someone to kill his wife, that he had approached an escort, that he had approached his mistress, that he was basically, in essence, throwing everything he had built away.
Rose Vincent insists that she acted out of love.
Rose tells investigators that Mark offered her $50,000 if she'll go through with this murder. She tells them that all she really wanted is Mark.
Rose, she was in love with him, I think. I really do believe she was.
And in the end, Mark's twisted heart proved to be his downfall.
Mark's undoing is his selfishness, and his way of life is the reason that he's now where he deserves to be.
Julie Bowling's friends and family are left reeling from her loss and from the painful irony that she was the one person who actually stood by Mark.
This murder was tragic because a good, good person lost her life and a bad, bad person committed this particular crime, unfortunately. You don't want the Julie Bowlings of the world to lose their lives because they are the good people out there.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Your personal info, like addresses, phone numbers, and more, are collected and sold by data brokers. But Aura steps in, scanning the web, sending you alerts, and requesting your info be removed. Get Aura's full toolkit, including credit and transaction monitoring, a password manager, VPN, and more. Get a 14-day free trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Tsinis.
Kayla Tsinis. I'm Kayla Tsinis, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.